Hi listeners, and welcome to my fourth episode of Inside Entertainment Industry Careers, a show that gives you personal insights into a variety of career roles in the creative industries. I'm your host, Emily Maguire, talent manager at Reflections Talent Agency and a career and business coach for the creative and entertainment industries at Reflections Career Coaching. My fourth guest is Sarah Juliet Deering, who shares her career insights as a costume designer and as a maker. Brighton-born Sarah grew up surrounded by a family of creatives and has travelled the world working in costume for a range of high-profile projects, including with Netflix, Marvel and Disney. And her stage-making career has seen her work in many Western theatres, including the National Theatre, Royal Shakespeare Company and Shakespeare's Globe. In this week's podcast, Sarah discusses the influences of growing up around Brighton Fringe Theatre and how work experience and mentorship have played crucial roles in the career choices she's made. She also explores starting a creative business and the importance of building strong networks and support systems to help you thrive. Lastly, Sarah shares her life wisdom on how early on in life she's learnt that a work-life balance is important in achieving overall well-being and happiness in your career. Hi Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your career insights.
Thank you for having me.
When we're young, we have all these ideals with the people that we meet in terms of what career we want to do. I wanted to be a vet when I was little, but I didn't go anywhere near that. Was that the same for you in terms of the people you met that inspired the career that you now do?
Strangely enough, I also wanted to be a vet, along with an archaeologist and a marine biologist and a firefighter. So I think it took quite a long time for me to know that costumes would be a career in the way that I do it now. But I was certainly always around very creative people. I had very creative parents, and my mum worked at various art colleges. But it did take quite some time for me to realise that costume was a thing in and of itself.
And did you do any work experience or anything that inspired that career?
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of tinkered around. I was really into the Dark Crystal and this particularly weird BBC puppet version of The Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, excellent.
So as I started trying to make things, there were people in my life that sort of spoke to me and showed me how to make stuff, my grandma and various other friends. But then in terms of kind of formal work experience, I went to school that wasn't doing super well academically, that doesn't exist anymore. And when we did our work experience in year 10, I sort of went off on my own to try and find something creative to do, because they didn't offer anything that really inspired me. So I ended up doing some work experience in the college theatre where my mum was working for 1 week, and then in a local bridal dressmakers. I just went in and asked if they would have me. I worked there for a week and they really taught me to sew and then took me on at the weekend. So I worked from when I was about 14, learning to sew and being around fabric from then, really.
So what made you go to the bridal shop in terms of, if you think of listeners that are potentially thinking about work experience?
Yeah, I mean, I was really young. I was 14, so I was just kind of, what have I walked past? Where can I go in and ask for my take me? And I think I knew I wanted to do something to do with sewing or to do with maybe to do with theatre or making things. Yeah, I didn't feel like I had that many avenues, so it was just literally somewhere I walked past, to be honest. And it was very easy. I think I was incredibly lucky. It was run by two really lovely women who was sisters in law and had kids of their own, and just kind of took me under their wing and decided that they would employ me to sweep up and teach me to sew. And I ended up making my prom dress with them and all kinds of things. So they were, I'm not sure how it would work now, to be honest, whether that would be a success. That I think the pressure on shops and retail and insurance and stuff might have accentuated quite a lot.
I love that you made your prom dress as well there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I probably could have pictures of it now, but
I mean, in terms of training then, after that point, you did a BA, is that correct?
I did, yeah. I was going to do textiles, but the course wasn't subscribed enough, so I ended up doing a kind of art, mixed media and drama, along with English and film studies at A level. And then through that's kind of where I really learned that you could train in costume specifically, because I was looking at fashion. It didn't feel, as an industry or the descriptions as courses, didn't really feel like a fit for me. And one of my tutors at A-level college suggested that I look at costume courses instead, and they just really sounded far more up my street. So I ended up going to Bournemouth straight through from A-level at 18. I didn't do an art foundation, which most people do, I think, because I had that additional experience in the bridal shop.
Okay, so that experience helped to get you to that next level then. So it was quite good to get the experience that you did, because that's been fundamental in terms of helping you make that jump straight into the BA.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm not sure that if I were my younger self again, I would potentially encourage me to go and do the art foundation and explore a bit further, because I think you don't realise the value of education, particularly free education, when you're in it. And then when you look back, you think, oh, that could have just been a year of really fun experimenting with different medias, meeting different people. But at the time, I was extremely driven. I'd worked in sewing since I was 14, and I thought, this is what I want to do. And just went for it, really.
Also very much a straight vision. You said screen and stage as well, didn't you? Have you got any preference between the two, or do you like both mediums?
I really love both, actually. They're considered to be quite different pathways within the industry, but I think the skills are really transferable, and the last few years have really shown that with the COVID crisis and the film strikes. You've seen a lot of movement between the two, I think a lot more than before. I don't have a preference, really. Film teams are a lot bigger, they're a lot more structured. The hours are very, very long, but they're a lot more structured, and they tend to be more hierarchical, so they can be really good if you have a specialism that you're really interested in, or if you want to learn lots of skills from its people in one go. But I find theatre generally feels more creative. The hours are a bit more ad hoc, there's usually less budget, and it can be a bit more collaborative and a bit more creative in terms of technique. In theatre, you tend to work more across the team, I find. So you'll interact with everybody. You'll interact with the whole costume team, as opposed to all the film where you, in film work, where you quite often just interact with your kind of half, your part of the team. So I absolutely love both.
And there's a mention as well, I think, when I was researching and looking into your background, was Fringe Theatre, was that heavily influential in the work that you do?
Yeah, massively. I mean, I think in some ways it sounds as though I've taken quite a traditional route into the industry, but the early part of my career was really very, very hustly. So straight after university, I moved back to Brighton, where I'm from, and worked in a shop. I wasn't quite sure what direction to take. I've been offered some work experience in TV in London for free, which I couldn't afford to do. I didn't have anywhere to stay, and I couldn't afford to lose my pub job. So I was working sort of 2-3 jobs at a time, and just kind of really unsure what I was going to do with myself. And then I ended up working for a really fantastic designer called Kevin Freeman, who taught at Globalden on the costume course for a while. I think he's moved now, but he was fantastic. And I was working freelance with him, and then just found myself taking on extra work around the side of that. So I did lots of work with drag artists, lots of lots and lots of fringe theatre, which all kind of tied into my background of going to festivals and being around creative people in that environment. And I think aesthetically, that's always been my happy place. You know, my dream job at uni was Cirque du Soleil or something like that, or being a drag artist. The kind of multimedia, sort of slightly more quirky, slightly more abstract, lots of kind of queer theatre. Those really were, huge influences on me.
I imagine there's lots of colour in terms of the costumes that you actually do with that influence as well.
Yeah, definitely. Colour and sparkles and frilliness. Just frivolity, really. I think, you know, a large part of what I enjoy doing is making people smile. And I do some period costume. I think there's a place for kind of accurate recreation, but there's people who really are drawn to that. And for me, that's not what I'm drawn to. I'm drawn to theatre or in a cabaret bar that makes you go, oh, wow, you know, makes your eyes light up.
Yeah, I love that. It's like you can just let your imagination run wild and do all these amazing costumes.
Yeah, and it's really about expression as well. I think that kind of early experience of working with lots of individuals, like individual performers as well as on productions, it's about how they want to express themselves and building these characters, which is really the cornerstone of costume. It's about character building, and I think that's why it appealed to me in a way that fashion didn't, because your starting point is a person, a character, something you want to give life. Whereas I think with fashion, you kind of, there's an extra step of imagination, I suppose, to come up with the person that you think might be wearing it.
So how did you make the transition from working for somebody else to actually running your own business?
That was, like most things in my career, completely accidental. When I was working in Brighton and like I say, very much hustling between different jobs. I had jury service and ended up losing one of my jobs because I had jury service and was wandering around without bunnies on the bus. And Kevin, who I mentioned earlier, had a notice in his window looking for an assistant, and that was a freelance role. So I signed up as freelance right then, and I've never looked back. So I have done some jobs that are PAYE or Schedule D when I've worked in larger film workrooms. But generally, I've worked freelance since then, and I've just found that the type of work I want to do and the people I want to work with want to work with freelancers. It's obviously grown quite a lot now. I have two studio spaces at the moment and a team, a very regular team of freelancers that help me out. And that's just been very organic growth, really, as exciting projects come in that I can't say no to, that I need help with. I've been able to gather people around me that can do the work, and it's been a very surprising and challenging but very organic journey for me.
So do you have any tips for our listeners who are potentially thinking about making that transition from freelance to running their own business?
I mean, I think it's a really difficult one. I suppose if you're already freelance, then taking on an assistant on a larger job is quite an easy step. But if you're moving from a secure contract or at least kind of regular temporary contracts into freelance, it is a very difficult, I would say it's probably a very difficult transition. I don't think I am a particularly good example of how to do it. So I'm not sure I'm really qualified to give tips, but I would say it's very rewarding. I would try and build up a network would be my main tip, really. The most useful thing you can have around you when you are working freelance or running your own business are people that you can rely on, either to step in physically when you're not very well or you have you know, things going on in your life, and also just to rely on for advice or for a second pair of eyes on something. If you're working on a big project and it's an important client, sometimes you just need someone to come in and reassure you and say, that looks great, or this bit, have you thought about doing it this way? If you can create relationships where you're constantly teaching and constantly learning, I think that's where the magic happens. So for anyone kind of considering going freelance in the industry as it stands now, I would definitely try and make sure that you have a good WhatsApp group set up with people that you can call on before you make the leap.
Yeah, that supportive network as well. And it sounds as well, from what you're saying, it's very much a cycle of continual growth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think university can be quite competitive. I think arts training in general can be quite competitive. And certainly the film industry is. Theatre is to an extent, but I think it's really important to push back against that and try and share your skills and ask lots of questions. You get further a lot faster if you can ask them something you don't know how to do, and will end up with far better relationships if you share things that you've learned how to do openly and with good faith without being too concerned about who's standing behind you for your job, because ultimately it's always a team effort. A production is always a team effort.
And you're a designer and a maker, aren't you? What's the difference between the two?
The difference between the two is massive. On the course I did, they've split it down. And I know that a lot of universities' courses actually split it from the beginning. You'll do a design or a construction course. And almost everything about it, unless you're working in fringe theatre where you're doing everything from the beginning, from the move boards to the designs, to the making, to the fittings, to, you know, press night, everything about it is different. So design is generally a lot of research, lots of sketching, lots of communication with the other departments, with the directors, with the showrunners, with the producers. You know, on smaller theatre, you might have a lot of interaction with the actors, and then your day-to-day is approving things, going to fittings, pulling things at hire shops. And so it's really, each job is kind of its own full-time capsule that you're working on. And then you also have the pressure of actioning all this research that you've done and these things you've been thinking about at 3 a.m. to try and get audiences to understand them and to get the departments to understand them. So it's got lots of pressure in its own kind of a way. And then construction, you will be given anything from a stick figure to an absolutely beautiful complete illustration, and you need to work out with the designer how to make that work. So the relationship tends to be really just with the designer and the supervisor, and then your team if you're working with a team. And you spend a lot more time, certainly for freelance, you spend a lot more time remotely. So you're doing a lot of self-directed work. Obviously, the physical side of the job is quite heavy when you're doing a lot of making. So they are kind of completely different roles with completely different skill sets. But I like to think they're more interchangeable than people think. And certainly as a maker, best relationships you have with designers are people that do allow you some creative freedom or some creative input, and it becomes that really nice finishing each other's sentences kind of relationship once it's built up over time, where someone can say, you know, it just needs to feel a bit jazzy, or it needs to feel a bit icky, and just kind of understand what they're meaning. They are very, very different structurally and skills wise.
That's interesting, because I wouldn't have a clue between the two, so it's nice to get that insight. When it comes to the commercial side, you've done like Lipton and Pot Noodle, and then like the making roles side, it's been the National Theatre and things like the West End. What's been your favourite out of all the projects that you've done?
I think everyone with a creative career, this is their least favourite question. It's the one that everyone asks you in the pub. And to be honest, for me, it's usually whatever I worked on about 3 months ago, when you've had enough time for the dust to settle and you're not stressed about it, and you look back at the photos and go like, that's really good. Bits of work that I'm particularly proud of, I suppose, are there was a version of A Midsummer Night's Dream that I did at the Globe a few years ago, which were these wonderful sort of carnival-inspired costumes, which I really enjoyed doing. And Juliet was my first West End job as a maker that kind of really exploded, where I worked with the designer from the very beginning to really work out how those costumes were going to go together. So that's one I'll always be really proud of. And then film work wise, I think it's always amazing seeing your work on the big screen. So I'm kind of proud of all of it. I made some stuff, just some streetwear for the Eternals movie, and went and saw that in the BFI IMAX. Wow. And that was quite the moment, seeing my shirt the size of a building. So that might be one of my favourite moments of really enjoying my work out in the wild.
That's so cool. So when you look back over your career, I know you mentioned Kevin, didn't you, the person that you worked with, but did he or anybody else give you any advice and wisdom that stuck with you throughout?
Yeah, I mean, so much from so many people, and it's always still being gathered. There's a couple of phrases that I am really fond of. One was a tutor of mine at university used to say, "You control the fabric, darling, it does not control you." And I think anyone who's tried to wrangle anything when they're sewing will understand that that's really important. I worked with a fantastic cutter called Claire Ramsell on the Matilda film for Netflix, who said, "These are hands, not ones," whenever things were a little too dramatic. I love that one. But I think perhaps the thing I think about is actually from someone outside of the industry, which was my cousin, when I was really struggling early on in my career and very unsure whether I would break into costume in any meaningful way and make a life out of it. And she said, you know, I was in my, I guess, mid-20s, and she said, "We worked for such a long time. You know, if you're 25 now, if you think about getting your dream job at 35, you're going to have to do the same job for another 30 years. So you ought to be aiming to get your dream job when you're like 45 or 50. And I thought that was a really nice way of looking at it, just kind of allowing you to take a step back and enjoy the experiences along the way and enjoy the kind of the amble of it. The creative careers are so sprawling and so random. I think even for people, there are lots of people that come out of uni and are far more motivated than I am and find a workroom that they like in a team, and they stick at it and they have a much more kind of structured entrance to the industry. But even then, it's so volatile, you know, particularly the last few years have been so volatile for everybody. And I think just sort of giving yourself the space to take on lots of different opportunities, to make mistakes, and to kind of just have some faith that you probably will get there. It just might not be when you're 25.
Would you say some of those things feeds into what's the most challenging aspect of doing your job?
Yeah, definitely. I think the insecurity is something you have to get really used to. If you don't have a big financial sort of family support network behind you or something like that, then there are going to be hard times. And I think it can be very lonely. So again, kind of feeding back into what we spoke about before of building up a network and making sure if you're working with a team, you trust people around you. Unfortunately, a lot of the other challenges in costume are to do with working conditions and stuff like that. So I think it's really important to join the union. It's really important not to work for free, even though it's tempting, and try and push back against some of those more negative aspects of the industry, which I think is actually happening quite naturally anyway, but it's certainly something to be aware of and recognize your own worth. Look after your body, particularly if you're making. It's okay if you have an evening where you can't push anymore and you need a bath and a glass of red wine. You should do that. And long term, Yeah, and some chocolate, well, whatever it is, do some yoga, go for a run, just something that makes your, you know, allows your body to relax and feel good and let out some of the stress physically and mentally, because it's quite easy to get stuck into a loop and feel an awful lot of responsibility for everything. And yeah, things definitely work better when your body is functioning and people will understand. You can give and take, you can let someone go early when they need to and you can go early when you need to. I think that's really important. Mm.
It's important to look after your mind and your body, like you say. We've touched upon some things in terms of the fringe when it comes to inspiration, but is there any other inspiration that you use when you're planning for the projects that you work upon?
Yeah, I think a lot of the inspiration for projects comes sort of from the project itself, because as either a designer or a maker, you're introduced to something that's sort of on its way. There's a script or there's part of a script, or, you know, with devised work, there's at least an idea of who these people might be. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the inspiration comes from just kind of immersing yourself in who that person is, where they're coming from, when they walk into the room, where have they been, you know, what are they thinking? Mm-hmm. And yeah, other departments, other teams. I think it's really important to sort of ground your inspiration. And then when you go off, you can go off and research and get very excited by this particular color that you found somewhere or this particular colorway that you really love and get incredibly attached to it. You know, when people talk about writing, they say, delete your favorite line. And I think you have to like not be too precious about ideas that you found on your own and really ground everything in the piece and the project, because at the end of it, everyone's name is on the same tin and you want that piece of work to be the most coherent and the best and the most inspiring and exciting that it can be. So casting a wide net is really good, looking at lots of different periods and lots of different, I look at lots of art and I really like making my own prints, taking colours from photographs. I like things like old theatre posters and old movie posters and stuff like that to get kind of a vibe of the thing. But yeah, it does always need to be weighted against the point of the production and the character and what you're trying to put out into the world, what you're trying to say with your work, really.
Again, I can hear that you point upon those skills like collaboration, teamwork, communication. It's all those transferable core skills that's needed, isn't it, in the creative industries?
Yeah, definitely. It's really important.
When you look back over your career and you consider the things that you've been through, is there a piece of wisdom that you've learned through this life experience that would be beneficial for our listeners to hear?
I guess life wisdom always ends up being the same. I think when you ask any creative, the work-life balance is going to be the number one thing that they point to. Just kind of, I think I have unluckily lost most of my parents quite young. And I think whenever you go through something big in your life, you take a step back and you look at what you spend your time doing. And I feel really lucky that I spend my time doing something that I love. I do absolutely love this career and I put my whole life into it. But when someone gets very ill or something like that happens, they take over and you realize that your life is an awful lot more than your career. And trying to bring that wisdom through into the way that you work every day, I think, is in an intentional way is really positive. And I'm lucky enough to have worked with so many different amazing people and have so many colleagues and lots of friends that I do feel like I have achieved a work-life balance in terms of quality, but certainly not in terms of time. I've spent an awful lot of time working, and I think in some ways that's a necessary part of the job, and in some ways it's a nice part of the job. It's nice to be obsessed with it, but I think just always having it in your mind, am I doing this extra hour because I really have to, or because I really want to, or am I doing it because it's the culture of the industry and I feel that I ought to, and actually my heart needs to be somewhere else. I think that's probably maybe a slightly cheesy way of expressing just that work-life balance is really important, and my advice would be to protect it.
Thank you. I think there's some lovely insights that you shared with us, and thank you so much for sharing them.
No, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Inside Entertainment Industry Careers podcast. Make sure to subscribe for an email notification of when the next podcast episode goes live in 2 weeks' time. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends, family, and network, and leave us some feedback.